But then, so when Product Tonight is doing well, did you guys think, okay, this is the opportunity we have? What then happens with the, did you get to do the, what happens to the follow-up single? Oh.
This is where it gets very, yo, bro. This is the first, let me tell you something, man. This is the first interview I have done about La Day in my adult life. In my adult life. All right.
Oh.
Yes. So there's so many things, man, that I'm like trying to navigate, because when it gets to this point, it's like a war zone. You don't know where to step, where there might be a landmine. You know what I'm saying? So that's where I am right now with this. So what I'll say is this. We did Party Tonight, and there was the remix. We went and got Chub Rock.
Chop rock, yeah.
Shout out to Chub Rock, great guy. I do the music history thing now. I was talking to Chub Rock on the phone, and I was doing some information. I was kind of interviewing him, and I was getting some information about Brooklyn hip hop. And he said, "I noticed that you on one of your lives, you said you were in a group that was signed to Andre Harrell." He said, "What group was that?" He was like, "'Cause I know all the groups." And I said, "Do me a favor. I'm gonna send you a link." I said, "Watch that link and call me back." He watches the link. He calls me back, and he says, "Bruh." He said, "I've been watching you all this time on the internet talk about all this stuff." He said, "And I've been saying to myself, I know this guy." Yes. All right. So we did that, and it was a great situation, man. I mean, we went everywhere. We performed everywhere. We came to London. We performed, and we toured, and we were on the radio. We did BET. I don't know if it was like Video Soul or Planet Groove, whatever was on BET at that time. We Soul Train, all of these things, man. And it was, we were living a dream, Well, to me, I was, because when I talked to some of my group members, it was a nightmare, some of the guys. But again, they're a little older than me. I'm just like, bro, I'm a teenager. I'm on Soul Train. I'm on BET. I'm on the radio. I'm straight. And then I have my hands in on these projects that we're writing. So we come out with a second single called Baby Hold On. Didn't have a video, but it was acoustic, like an acoustic guitar, almost like how
Cupid, huh? 112
yeah,
Cupid.
like that. Our song predates their song, cute. But I think, now you could talk to 112 about this, but I always assumed, and I could be wrong about this, but I always assumed that they were inspired by When Can I See You Again by Babyface.
So I interviewed
Babyface.
Mike and Slim about that song.
They say that?
Yeah, so they went to meet Baby. They had Babyface come in to write for them. The budget was a little too high, so they said, "Well, let's try and do our own version of a Babyface track," and that's how they came up with that.
Bro, I never knew that.
Yeah,
I
so they
never.
said that, yeah, they couldn't afford it, so they tried it. They did it themselves. So.
I knew that in my heart. I heart knew it. I ain't head know it. But listen, but we all were inspired by When Can I See You Again? Most groups during that time had one song with an acoustic guitar. It was us, 112, Jodeci, Boyz II Men. Well, Boyz II Men had Water Runs Dry. But I mean,
Even
Portrait, all the
Kissing You by Total,
it's new by Total. You had the group that we made, How Deep Is Your Love? We're living in the world of fools. I guess it was Portrait that remade How Deep Is Your Love by the Bee Gees. But everybody's coming with this acoustic guitar. But I really want to say it was Babyface's.
I thought it was phase two. Wine is phase
Oh,
two.
yes. Yes. Oh, you know what Portrait did? Tears in Heaven.
Eric Clapton,
That was another one. You see what I'm saying? So, oh, we all were going for that same thing.
Oh
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Tony Rich project doing that,
Nobody knows it but me. You know? So, okay, Baby Hold On wasn't it was that was our acoustic, you know, soulful. And what happens is, man, in the middle of that, the rumbling started happening that they're going to remove Andre Harrell. The rumbling started happening. Oh man, you know what? He might get fired, you know, or they may change regimes and all of this stuff. And so people started kind of telling us, yo, y'all need to start looking out for what y'all gonna do next. So in the middle of us having this, I've never told this story, my brother, and I'm giving you the exclusive, right? We had a song called Baby Hold On. A couple of years before that, Janet Jackson had a song called Anytime, Anyplace. Shout out to Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. There was a R. Kelly remix
Oh, I
to
love that
Anytime.
one. No, that
Everybody
was,
does.
yeah.
So we said, oh, Motown said, well, maybe R. Kelly can, you know, remix your song, Baby Hold On. And we were like, cool. So we give the money, they give the money to R. Kelly to do it. R. Kelly remixes Baby Hold On. We got it back. Never came out. So we have an R. Kelly remix for our song. This is when we were getting caught up in the shenanigans, and then it became like, y'all need to figure out what y'all gonna do next. So we started revamping the album, and we said, yo, we need something for the clubs. That's when we went right over here on 235th here in Queens, and we did Get It On Tonight. That was going to be a Lade song. We wrote it, we produced it, we recorded it. And then when you hear Montel Jordan's version today, girl, if I could find the words to say, I got to get away from a love that kills me every day, that's Lade. Because that was our song. They left the vocals on from the original session. But that's when that song was done.
Oh, so you were doing a song to Bunza?
No, I said it never. So we it never came out on us. Yeah.
So you were doing a song to almost as if, okay, we need to get something more hot. And then were you going to add it onto the album, or what was the purpose of that?
It On Tonight was done. That was going to be for that album. We were going to revamp the album, and we felt like we needed to be a little bit more us, you know. And Get It On Tonight was really like us. That's how we roll. That's how we sing. That's how we write. That's what we do. And yeah, so by the time we did that and revamped it, Andre was on his way out. And once he was on his way out, this is this for the second time that we requested for a release from the label. And we requested the release. I don't know if we got it or if the deal just ran out. I don't remember how that happened, but we ultimately ended up being free agents. And it wasn't like Andre Harrell dropped us and then left. It was like he was going to leave. We wanted off at that time, you know, because we kind of found ourselves in another position where we were like, man, this is not the right situation for us as a group, you know? So we were revamping it, but we were also looking and saying, when we finish revamping this, maybe we can end up taking this project to another label, you know? And like a bang bang kind of thing, Andre was fired. We were off Motown, and Dallas Austin heard Get It On Tonight. By the time Andre was fired, we were in Atlanta. That's my recollection. If Brian and Darren and Quint were here, maybe they would know the timeline a little bit better than me. But I'm thinking that that whole transition was happening. We were working with Dallas Austin. Dallas had an artist named Derek Dimitri. You know him?
No,
You
no,
ever
no, no. No.
Look him up. Derek Dimitri. Dallas Austin had an artist named Derek Dimitri. He was originally from a group called, they were a band. It was Dallas Austin and these guys, the City something. They, oh my God, they were supposed to be really groundbreaking. I can't think of their name, but the viewers, just look that up. Dallas Austin group, a band, or whatever. That's the one. All right. This guy came from that group, Derek Dimitri. And something City Rollers. Oh my God. We gonna get this. We're gonna get this. So Derek Dimitri comes out of that group. Dallas hears Get It On Tonight because we were shopping our songs. We were also trying to get work as writers and producers. Dallas hears the song, Get It On Tonight, and he wants it for his artist, Derek Dimitri. This is before Montel Jordan. So this is a lot of a song. Dallas hears it and he's like, nah, bro, this is, yo, we need to do this on my artist. Free World was Dallas's a label, Free World.
Oh,
So
okay.
we went down to Atlanta, me being last, going down, and we went down there to cut the song on Derek Dimitri. Get It On Tonight. And we did. Derek Dimitri recorded Get It On Tonight. Yo, Atlanta DJs started playing it. DJs, some of the DJs overseas started playing it. I think they put it out to like a DJ pool. Somehow another, a bunch of DJs have their hands on this. So before it was commercially released, something happened with Dallas in the deal or whatever, whatever. And it got all the way up into the commercial release and it didn't happen. But that is what Usher heard. Usher heard Derek Dimitri Get It On Tonight in Atlanta. And it was on fire. It was going to be a hit. When it didn't come out, Usher's thing was, I want to do that song. And somehow or another, he never did it. I think it was kind of like, maybe it was, you got to ask him, but maybe it was kind of like, well, Derek Dimitri's already done it. You can't do a song that he's already done. A lot of Atlanta DJs already know it. You can't do it.
Okay. And this would be LA at LaFace saying, yeah,
Yes.
okay. So he
A
didn't come
year.
to you directly to talk about it.
No, I never spoke to Usher about that song in particular. Nope. A year later, JoJo Brim, who I said was from that group and, of FS Effect, from Uptown Records, they were affiliated with Uptown Records.
Yeah.
They were on a different label, though. But by this time, JoJo Brim was having success as an A&R. He had Case, Touch Me, Tease Me, and all that. He had all that stuff. Yeah, so he was he had Montel. He was working that project. He says, I want Montel to do this song, Get It On Tonight. And we told him, yo, we are it already kind of like had some type of release. DJs know who it is. Like they heard it. Dallas. And he said, nah, we can make this happen. So they had to get on the phone with Dallas to work something out. Montel's the third person to record Get It On Tonight. And it came out and it became a hit.
But then when he's recording it, I know Shep Crawford was doing production, but did you guys get involved with production?
We get it on tonight?
Yeah.
Shep Crawford?
Or was it you guys who did the production with Montel?
Yeah, we did. We
Okay.
did. We did production on every version of Get It On Tonight. It was
Okay, so
produced.
Shep wasn't involved with that.
Production, not on Get It On Tonight.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Let you know what? Let let's
You
you know what? Let's do some digging.
did
Let's do some digging
dig.
because I'm a you but you about to make me have to tell on somebody. And I might have to do this. I'm sorry, but this might have to happen. If I see, hold on. Producers. Oh no. Okay, producer Brian Palmer, Sergio Moore. That's what I'm seeing. What do you see?
Do they call it the tonight or get it on tonight? I'm just always just
Get It On Tonight. Okay, the song went through many names. When we was doing it was called One On One. And then it was the same song. We called it One On One. When Derek Dimitri did it, yeah, it was called Get It On Tonight. Oh, now on the Derek Dimitri version, did you find that one?
no. Okay, so Yeah, Brian Palmer. Yeah.
Brian Palmer, that's
Yeah,
my guy. That's
okay.
from La Day. Brian Palmer and Sergio Moore. That's PLX. They're the producers of Getting On Tonight.
Okay. So, but you guys did the writing. But how's Montel credited for as a writer?
Now we talking. I'm trying to give you all the information so that you can draw your own conclusions. Get It On Tonight existed for years before it was recorded by,
No
like,
change, the same song, the same exact.
same song. It's the business, my brother. But you know what? What I will tell you is this, and it's something that I left out. Shout out to Brian Palmer, Bezo. I know he's gonna watch this. I left something out. I left something out. I text Case before I did this interview. All right. And I have Case is back here somewhere because I, you know, he's someone I worked with from the very beginning. La Day was me, Darren, my brother, as I said, and Quint. And remember when I said my brother left the
To go
group
to
and he went to
college,
college?
yeah.
So Jimmy Manus and JoJo Brim, Manus Entertainment, they had a group called Black. Blacky. Why is it doing this? Like,
Sorry.
like Black is like the hardest name, and then like the softest, like I don't know why. I don't know why it's doing that. But it's adding, you know, it's a new year. This is a new year. So maybe that's new still in January. So but Blacky, Black was the name of the group, a duo. Brian, I don't know, brother. I do not
That's
understand.
funny. It is fun.
It's
Okay.
maybe I'm saying Happy New Year, you guys. So it was Brian Palmer and Case Woodard. They were a duo. Are you gonna edit this?
No, of course not.
You're not gonna edit it? Are you gonna leave
No.
it
Yeah, of
in there?
course, definitely.
Yo, that's gonna be beautiful. So those two guys, all right. They were a duo called Black, Case and Brian. Brian came over to La Day. Once Trey left the group, Case became a solo artist.
So
But
you've
Case
known
was already,
Case for a while.
huh?
So you've known Case from.
I've known Case since I was a child.
Oh.
I've known him since I was a kid. You know,
Wow.
I've known Case, I was like a child. And Case was originally a solo artist. Brian was a solo artist. They got with Manus Entertainment. They became a duo. When we had a vacancy in the group because of my brother's departure, Brian came into that group. Case remained a solo artist. That's how the, and then we went on the road with Case. I've written with Case, sung with Case, been in Case's band. You know, when Case is on the Apollo, that's us back there singing
Okay.
background. Happily Ever After, that's us.
Okay.
So I just wanted to kind of throw that in there. But but to go back to your thing, yes, Montel Jordan is a writer, is listed as a writer on Get It On Tonight, his version. It's the same one as Derek Dimitri, and it's the same one that La Day did.
It
But you
because
know, the business aspect of it, you know, really came into
yeah,
play.
as I said, so I think one of the things, as I said, I've been doing this since 2020, and I kind of I don't even know how many people I've interviewed, but we've heard different stories about how things move, and the difference between having your song, Montel made it a worldwide hit, being on it, as opposed to if it had just done being a regional little hit. And so there's also that compromise about and how the industry and the business does work and stuff. Was it much convincing for you guys to relinquish some ownership of it when Def Jam came in to say, "Hey, we've got this, but here are some conditions." Was it hard to make that decision, or was it like?
Bro, I'm about to give you a bombshell. I'm about to give you a bombshell. And I never thought I would do this. But here's what I'll say. First, let me say this. I have no bad blow with Montel Jordan. I've only met him a couple of times. We never were, we, you know, he's a West Coast guy. We're East Coast
Yeah.
guys. Every time I met Montel was every time I was around him, he was a great man. He was a great guy, very nice to me, you know. And I have nothing bad to say about Montel, and what I'm about to say does not reflect on him. So I want to be clear about this. What I'm about to say does not in any way reflect on Montel Jordan. All right. We never agreed to that. We never agreed to giving up anything. Never agreed to it. So it just happened. You know what I'm saying? Like it just happened. But yeah, it would have been tough, you know, for us to make that decision. But I think ultimately we would have. I think ultimately we would have said, okay, well, we'd have, but we never had the, you asked a great question, because we never had the chance to really decide. It just happened. So
And so how, I mean, going for then, yeah, does that change what you guys decide to do as artists, thinking about we need to step back and do more of the stuff and manage our business a lot better? Or does it, how does that leave you guys?
well, that situation is a little different, because there's nothing that we could have done better in that situation. The only thing that we could have done is like fought back, because it's one of those type of situations where, and I'm not trying to throw any particular person under the bus by name. Again, this has nothing to do with Montel Jordan himself. Trust me, he has nothing to do with this. Montel probably said, hey, I would like to have this percentage. Or somebody could have said to him, hey, these guys have a song for you, and I'll be sure to get you a percentage, something like that. But we would have had to sign off on a percent. We would have had to sign off on it. That never happened. All right. We never got the opportunity to negotiate in the way that we would have wanted to negotiate. You know what I'm saying? It ultimately turned out fine, but it was just it was less of a thing where it was like we need to get our business together, and it was more like you got to watch people, because you never know what can happen behind closed doors, under the table, so on and so forth. You know what I'm saying? It was more like a confirmation that it's a dog eat dog business. It was, you know what I mean? But it was bittersweet, because that's the number one song. When it, I mean, when that joint went to number, it was literally number one, like in January. Like we're literally celebrating the whatever anniversary that is. Like that was now. It was in Jan. It was, I started my year off like, woo, like I'm on top. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like fighting an enemy, and then you just go pump, pump, and drop them. And it's like, damn, I dropped them. You know what I'm saying? That's what it felt like to be able to cut through, cut right through,
But
and have a song.
isn't it bittersweet though? Because that was, in some ways, you ever think, well, that should have been us at number one.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what? Yes, you do think like that. But the thing that comes, it's kind of like, how can I put this? If you look at a thing and you say, here's how I put it, every writer has had someone steal their song or jack it, take a little piece of it, zig instead of zag, but it's still my, you know, that's still my thing. There's not a singer out there, I'm sorry, not a writer out there that can't tell you that happened to them some way, somehow. All right. The question becomes, how good are you? If, let's take the GOAT, Babyface. Let's say Babyface is coming into the game. Babyface writes, I don't know, what's one of his first hits? What was that up-tempo record off of his very first album?
I don't know.
I want
No.
you, babe. You know, that I love you, babe. That joint. Okay.
Okay.
Imagine if somebody to, no. Let's go before that. Let's go before that. Let's go to the deal. Let's go to the deal. The deal.
Okay. Two occasions, something like that. Okay.
All right. So let's say it's the deal, and somebody takes Shoot 'Em Up Movies, And it's like, ah, that was a brilliant song. Somebody jacked us. They got us. But we can't come out with, or let's say somebody wants to buy it. Man, the question becomes, Face, can you write another song as good as Shoot 'Em Up Movies? Do you have another one in you? Are you capable of it? Do you believe in yourself enough that you can give this away, but create something else just as good, maybe better? If the answer is yes, you write two occasions. You get what I'm saying? And then two occasions, and then that becomes. So it becomes a choice you have to ask yourself as a writer and as a producer when you're giving something away that could be yours. Are you capable of doing something just as good or better than that song? And the answer for me was yes. So the question becomes, okay, we keep it. Lade. Lade broke up that year. The same year. The same year that we did Party Tonight, that later on that year, well, I won't say broke up. One of the members left the group, Quentin left the group. So it was just down to three, and we were kind of scrambling. What are we going to do? Getting On Tonight was number one during a time where we were trying to figure out what we're going to do as a group. But we got a hit as writers and producers. Let's go down that road right there, at least for a time, and continue to work. You know what I'm saying? That angle. And that's what we did.
The three of you, or just so.
Together and separately, myself, I began to write for other people and do some production. Darren got with some people and started doing some writing. Brian had his partner, Sergio Moore, who they were doing some production together. They started getting with Rockefeller and doing stuff with them, Rel. And drag no, no, with Dragon, not with Rockefeller, but they started getting Rockefeller and doing some stuff. And you know, I was in the mix with some other things, and you know, music Soul Child, and you know, and stuff like that. And then ultimately, we went on the road with Case, we went on the road with Donnell Jones. I think me, Brian, and Darren went on the road with Case, but I think it was just me and Brian that went out with Donnell. And we started just kind of touring with people, you know what I'm saying? And doing that while we're writing and while we're producing or whatever. It was Case that was in Minneapolis with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis after they did that, the Best Man soundtrack, Case, RL, Tyrese, Genuine. Case was in Minneapolis. He was playing a song with me singing on it. Jimmy and Terry say, "Who is that?" And he says, "That's Little Tone." Yo, what's his deal? What's his situation? And they call me. And I said, "Yo, there's Brian, there's Darren. We still together. You know what I'm saying? We rocking, you know?" And they said, "They're looking for a band." And I said, "Well, I play. You know, Brian does a little bit playing as well." I said, "So let's do it." That's how we linked with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. That's how that even happened. And when I went to Minneapolis, I feel like we did everything. We worked with Jimmy and Terry. I got on other projects with them. You know, it was amazing.
Did you have to relocate to Minneapolis or for a while or?
Well, what I tell people, I always say, I moved to Minneapolis for a while. But it sounds good, right? But technically that's true. We spent a year or two in Minneapolis. And Jimmy and Terry, they got us a place. We were driving around. I mean, you know, that's where we were going to sleep, going to the studio, going to the gym, going to the mall. I mean, that's just where we were for a long time. I still lived in, but I spent a lot.
So you were working on Flight Time. Did you do stuff with Sound of Blackness, a solo
No,
mix?
Solo was before this period. So I never met Solo. By the time we went to
Okay.
Minneapolis, Solo had already had their run with Flight Time.
Okay.
Now
Was it Stokely?
Stokely, and then everybody was kind of coming through Flight Time. Jordan Knight, Yolanda Adams, TLC, Pink, Mariah Carey, they were coming through. You know what I'm
Oh,
saying? And
Mary and
yeah,
Mary
we
J.
were
Blige and Usher.
absolutely. Usher. I'm not going to, there's a whole thing, but Usher, yes, Usher was up there right after us. He went up there too. Shout out to my guy, Usher, you know, but you know what, man? You know what it is? The business is so political. I love Usher, man. Usher is a friend of mine. Dope dude. I am so proud of that guy. I am proud of Usher. Out of all people, he's one of the people who I'm most proud of. But yeah, he went up there, was doing confessions. That same pocket of time.
But what would Jimmy and Terry have you guys do? Like you, what would you be doing when all these guys are there?
Listen, I'll give you an example. Yolanda Adams was doing a song, Be Ready. I'm gonna be ready. And may Big Jim rest in peace. He was a big part of that. Because they
Big
had already
Jim,
done, they had already done Open Up My Heart for her.
but that was a massive one, yeah.
Oh my God. They
Beautiful
just,
song.
you know, they that it was an award winning. I mean, it was just amazing. And it would kind of be, it would be a situation where it would be like, Tone, what you doing? I'm doing something. Yo, come in here right quick. All right. Go in there. They working on a song with Yolanda Adams. I get involved. Like it was like, because you got people just walking around, just doing different stuff. You know what I'm saying? And the hope is, you know, it's Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. The hope is to get in there and just, what are they doing? What are y'all working on? What are y'all working on? You know what I'm saying? And there were some new artists in there. There were established artists in there. And the thing was to get in where you fit in, if you can. And that's what I was doing.
What's it like working with, two of the greatest songwriter producer duo of all time? Just watching, I mean, if going back from SOS Band, Time, Sirelle, Alex. I mean, I can go on and on.
Okay. So let me first say this. Let me first say shout out to Bobby and Izzy, the Avila brothers. Geniuses. Shout out to them because we worked with them while we were there too. You know, and working with them was really, really dope as well. So I just had to put that out there 'cause those are my guys, you know, and those guys are just so amazing. Jimmy and Terry. Bruh. This is how I usually put it. Working with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was like working, was going to two universities at one time, two universities at the very same time. That's what being with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was like. The process was Jimmy's laid back. You know, Jimmy loves history like me. So we would sit around and talk. I had this question for them. I said, yo, there's this, the Minneapolis Sound. There's this thing that would happen. It would be like this. It's that pause right there. Yo, where does that come from? I'm like, I hear it in Vanity. I hear it in Time. I hear it in Janet Jackson. I hear Prince. Where does that come from? And then Terry would be like, man, that's a good question. You should ask Jimmy. And then Jimmy would be like, year was about 1981. We were in a studio one night. But that's what it would be like. So talking to Jimmy was like a computer, just a wealth of knowledge in a theory, in composition, in history, and he remembers everything literally, and he retains it all. I was like, man, I want to be like Jimmy Jam. So Jam is one of my all-time favorite composers. One of my all-time favorite people that ever touched a piano and created something. Jimmy Jam. That sound. It is the sound of melancholy. It's the sound of beauty. It's the sound of love. It's the sound of sadness. What Terry is, the funk. So Terry gonna give you that grit. So this is why you can hear like control. And then they go into the da, 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 da. You know, so they go into those pretty parts. That's Jimmy. And then that grit, that bottom, that funk, that's Terry. You know what I'm saying? And so to watch that, one, two, Terry Lewis in words. Terry Lewis's relationship with concepts in words is otherworldly, because Terry is he's like a sage, bro. Dude is like a philosopher. Seriously. He doesn't talk publicly as much as I would like him to talk, because I want him to, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, tell him, man. But Terry's the type of person where if you talk to Jimmy and say, "Can you stand the rain? Talk to me about that." Jimmy is going to tell you about the composition of it. He's going to tell you some of the story that goes behind when they recorded it. I remember Ralph came in around 3. You know, Rick had just, his flight was late. So when he came in, you know, he was a little tired. So what we did was we put him here instead of here. But like, that's what Jimmy's going to do. And you're going to get this backstory. Terry's going to say something like, "Listen, man, you know, a flower is never going to grow. A plant's never going to grow without rain. So we wanted to do something like that. You can't go, in order for you to grow, in order for you to get to where you're going, you have got to go through some rain. And then what do you need? You need sun, but you also need rain." He's going to give you that. And you're just going to be, you're going to be better for it, like in your life. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to come away from talking to Terry being a better man. You know what I'm saying? Like, wow. In the same thing with Jimmy, man, it's like they are the first people of their kind that I ever met in this business. All right. So they love family. They love God. They love music. They are in touch with society, the community, culture. They have a worldview. Bro, nothing like it. Nothing like it.
"On Bending Knees" by Boyz II Men is one of my top 5 favorite tracks.
Listen, right there. "Until You Come Back to Me," right? Commission had that song. "I'm So Unworthy, Lord." You heard it here first. "I'm So Unworthy," commissioned. "Bended Knee" has that one part that draws from Commission.
Wow.
Yo, and there was recently something Fred Hammond was talking about how he borrowed from Boyz II Men the bridge of their song, "I'll Make Love to You," for one of his songs. But then he said, "Yeah, man, but you know what, though? They borrowed from me, too." And he's absolutely...
Yeah. You know, but it is interesting, as you mentioned, when you talk about composers, because and about Jimmy and Terry and how the magic they have, you know. And I think one of the biggest things was with Karen White, because when I interviewed Karen, she had Ellie and Babyface that created magic off her debut album, and then of course Jimmy and Terry did the second album. But it was almost as if they were trying to compete with themselves, there are people that they work with that they can just bring out the best, and I think she was too close to home that just had it really had an impact on how that album came out.
Well, you know what, you know, I Terry would always say, there's 3 types of songs: there's good songs, there's bad songs, and then there's hits. A good song could be a hit. A bad song could be a hit. Never get caught up into just trying to write hits, because you could just turn up just writing a bunch of bad songs. Just write good songs, and the hope is that they become hits. And so he said, some of our favorite songs were B-sides. Some of our favorite songs that we did, Terry said, were never singles. Some of the favorite songs that we did, Terry said, weren't even hits. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes you get somebody and you just work. You just do what you think is great. between somewhere between the politics, consumers in the world, they're going to decide what that is, but it still can't affect what you do. So what they do is that's what they did. That's what they did. They just got in the studio and they worked. And they just did a whole bunch of good songs. You know what I'm saying? And some flavors go, this goes good with this. That goes good. That goes good with this. Some things go better together, than other things. But when you taste kind of like if you put an oboe, with a maybe an electric guitar or something, it may be a little weird. And you know what I'm saying? But then you take that same oboe and you put it with the Philharmonic, and then you take that electric guitar, put it with bass and drums. It's like, whoo, great, great instruments, So some things go better together than others.
Well,
It happens.
when did you leave them then? What did you do next when you left them after a year and a half?
I never left them.
Oh, well, okay. So you said you did about a year and a half or
Listen,
so.
just in September in Pittsburgh, I was a part of the Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis review, and I was singing a bunch of the Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis hits. Just in September. Shout out to Ann Nesby, who was there, and Sherelle and everybody, the SOS band and stuff. They were part of that.
Oh.
I continue to be connected with Jimmy and Terry
Okay,
and get
okay.
opportunity where I can. But to add, I know what you're asking. I know what you're asking.
Yeah.
I can't. When I came back from Minneapolis, I came back and I became, along with Breezo and PLX, we started a production company called The Gutter Fam. And we became in-house producers for G Unit. So we worked with 50 Cent. This is when we started getting into the hip hop because we did a song for 50 Cent called So Serious. The Gutter Fam, that's us. We did another song with 50 Cent called Family Matters. In that same pocket of time, I did a song for, under the Gutter Fam, for Music Soul Child called Where Are You Going on his Soul Star album. And interestingly enough, that album starts out with Cal Riddick. Cal Riddick is singing at the beginning. Yeah, that Cal Riddick is singing in the beginning of that album. She was on Motown when we were on Motown. She was our label mate back
Okay.
then. But DMX,
Oh, yeah, goodbye.
Goodbye, yes, DMX.
Ghostface Killah, you did something with him?
Yes,
And Carl
okay.
Summers?
So I had a song called Best Kept Secret. Okay. That came out just a little bit later. And Best Kept Secret is a spinoff of something earlier that was done. Shout out to Bezo and PLX because that song was Never Be the Same Again. That's straight up Bezo, that's his whole vibe. You know what I'm saying? And we did that. And so we took that. That was a hit for Ghostface and Carl
Case a
Thomas.
Carl Summers, yeah.
Yep. And we took that and wanted to do a song for me. So what I started doing in that same pocket of time was stumbled upon the name TL Cross. And I went from being Tone, Little Tone, to TL Cross. And it was like I'm still in the group slash band because when we were with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, our name was Morrison Slick. Morrison Slick was the name. And we had a couple of releases. There's a guy out there by the name of Dan Dodds, Soul Jones, out there in the UK. And we released something under that name, Morrison Slick, a song called Look at Me Now, in conjunction with Jimmy and Terry and them, Bobby and Izzy. And we did a song with Faith Evans called Happy Ending. Now, I don't think that ever came out. I don't think that ever came out, but that was going to be our single with Jimmy and Terry because we were signed with through Flight Time to Arista.
Okay.
That's L.A. Reid. L.A.
Yeah.
Reid. During the same time, Morrison Slick did have a release on, interestingly enough, Steve Harvey had an album called A Sign of Things to Come. And Dave Hollister was on it. A few people were on it. Morrison
Okay.
Slick that album too. Again, Morrison Slick technically is Lade. minus one member, but with us now playing and singing and kind of doing that thing. So that had a couple of releases. But ultimately, TL Cross, I said, you know what? I'm still in this thing, but let's just do it like this. Maybe I'll get out, do some lead stuff. And it wasn't my idea. It was Brian's idea from the group. Listen, bro, every time we go somewhere and we play them a song, they say, who's that singing? And we say, that's TL Cross. And they say, well, can we sign him? Is he a solo artist? And we always say, nah, he's in a group. Oh, we're not looking for a group. We're looking for a solo artist. So B said, every time we say that, it's like closing the door. Next time they ask us, who's that guy? Is he available? Let's just say yes. And then you'll be up front. We'll back you up. We'll be on backgrounds and be on the stage with you, like as background vocalists. We'll just do it that way. And it was like, all right. So I went out and tried my hand at being a solo artist. That's how TL Cross was born, as a solo artist. And then I started working with everybody as TL Cross. Jadakiss, this one, that one, as TL Cross in the hip hop world and in the R&B world.
They're doing feature backgrounds or producing or what?
Listen, man, if you go to a song called All Falls Down by Jadakiss, that's Jadakiss featuring TL Cross. And I'm in the video. I'm performing, I'm singing, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing. Shout out to DJ Absolute, who produced that. You know, so yeah, in every capacity, I was working with artists from R&B to hip hop as a writer, as a singer, as a musician, and as a producer. Whatever needed.
But then, if you're TL Cross, what happens to Morrison Slick? Are they not still? Are you doing your hands dip in both ponds and or?
It the kind of camera shifted to TL Cross. And then when you looked at TL Cross, you see Bezo right here with me singing. He's from Morrison Slick. Darren had moved down to Atlanta, so he wasn't there, but it was more like, if something happens with me, Darren's right on board. Darren's like, all right, you know, what do you need me to do? So we were still like a unit, you know what I'm saying? But the focus became more so on me as an out front artist. And we kind of, you know, followed wherever that took us, you know?
One of my good friends, Stevie, who I do a podcast with, said you had you did recorded a solo album but never got released, but in a way got leaked. But and some people probably listened to it. What was the process with leaking?
Yeah, well, he's right. He's kind of right. What happened was, over a period of time, I was recording, producing, writing, and recording a lot of songs. All right, and this is the leak that he's talking about. One of the labels got hacked, and I want to say, one of the labels got hacked in a particular year and got their hands on a bunch of those songs that was in people's email that we were submitting. And it was me. It was my songs, my voices and stuff, my voice and stuff like that. That got released, and it's looked at as like, oh, this was a release. These songs were released, but I never released them. Those were ideas and, you know, things that were being worked out and stuff. This way online. Now, there was an EP that I released a few years after that. The World Soul EP. The World EP. And shout out to my production partner, Needles, who had just done let me see, Just the Way You Are by Bruno Mars. You know, great. He was in my band when he was going around doing the TL Cross stuff. He was the DJ and he was doing production. Brian's doing production. He's singing. PLX from Get It On Tonight as well. He's on guitar. He's doing some vocals as well. So we would like this unit, like this crew of friends who were producing and writing for everybody. We would get on the stage with me singing live and stuff like that. So that led to a partnership between myself and Needles. And we ended up working on various artists, namely Nicole Bush. in 2018, 2019, which she had a number one hit, song with You, the song You. And and a moderate hit with the song called Mr. Big Shot and another one called Rain. With Def, let me see, not Def Jam, Roc Nation.
Okay.
Roc Nation. She was in Roc Nation. So yeah, man, I constantly continued writing, producing, and having releases, man, and having some success,
So were you able to get ever getting back to thinking about bringing your own stuff out, or does the industry think, you know what, is it not worth the effort and it's easy to have?
Okay, great question. So just so that the viewers could know, what I'm doing today, all right, well, to answer your question, but let me give it some context. I had begun being a local historian a little over 10 years ago here in Queens, preserving the stories in the history of the Black community in Queens. And some of the older people preserving their stories and what they've seen, what they've done. And then I started interviewing people like Bill Curtis from the Fatback Band, DJ Hurricane of Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and Afro's fame. Next thing you know, I'm talking to Salt and Pepper. Next thing you know, what? Shout out to Kim James, who helped me facilitate some of that in Leotis Clyburn and him and all of these people. And I ultimately kind of broke out as on the internet as a person who took my historian work, because I got to a position where I began to study under world-renowned historians and getting that schooling, as a historian. And here we are today, where I spent 2023 as the face of Bounce TV, right on television, doing hip hop history. A lot of it is hip hop history. Some of it is R&B history, gospel history, jazz history. But because last year was such a hip hop celebratory year, I was doing a lot with that. I've interviewed everybody from Grandmaster Flash to Roxanne Shanté to will.i.am to Jimmy Jam. I've interviewed people from Salt, Pepper, Kid Play, DMC. I have interviewed just so many people, who are legendary, in these worlds. I mean, Brenda Russell, people who I just look at, it's just like these are like the ultimate. And that's where I am today. I am doing a lot of those things. I have my hand in on a couple of documentaries. Here's the answer to your question. Because of all that, I'm always recording, I'm always producing, I'm always writing. What I've been doing is scoring a lot of the documentary work that I've been doing. Right now, I tell people like this: I will release 10 albums or none. It just has to make sense. Whatever I do, if it makes sense, I will 1,000% do it. Because as I said, I'm also a minister of music at a church, so I'm singing every week. Every week I'm singing. I mean, I feel great, like vocally, I feel great, So I'm at a place where I don't have a problem with just scoring all of the stuff that I'm doing. I don't have a problem producing and writing for other people, nor do I have a problem with releasing an album. I have an unreleased album right now called Basement Vinyl. And everyone that I've played it for has loved it. But my thing is, I care about it so much in a lot of stuff that I do until it has to be put out right. And if it's not, I will sleep like a baby.
But do you need to have a label to push it out? Or I mean, or is the incentive, are you at this place where there's no financial incentive to just release music, where if it's coming out, it's more for the love and the pleasure?
Yeah. Well, like, listen, I love to perform live. I love to do, I love all aspects of it. I love studio life. I love just the composition of it. I love live performing. I love all of that stuff. But if I'm going to do a thing, I would like to I would like it to be in a position to have the best opportunity to be heard. You know, right now I'm in the opportunities that I have to be heard are speaking, and those opportunities have to do with dissemination of history, because that's another passion of mine. You know what I'm saying? My mother is a retired educator. My father's a retired author. My dad's book right here, Harp Hunters. Like, my dad's a retired a musician and, you know, composer and stuff. And that, you know, God, you know, blessed me to have that. They're still with me. They're still here. Oh, I'm a family man. I'm a husband. I'm a dad. I love that as well. I opened up a Cross Academy of Performing Arts, and we are in the Bronx, we are in Harlem, we are in New Jersey, and we're working on coming home to Queens and stuff. So I'm always working. I'm always doing stuff that requires me to be on top of my game as far as performing music, or whether it be playing music, teaching music. I'm not in the classroom as much anymore, but putting other people in positions to teach, to work, to write, to produce, and then telling the story of other people's journey in music, that brings me a lot of joy, and that's a passion of mine. So I've been doing that for the last past few years. I'm in a position, my brother, where the opportunities that present themselves, whatever makes sense, I'm with it.
Yeah.
You know?
So in a way, what I've just been trying to do with you to get in your story and capturing it, you're doing that from your local community.
You know, so the Cross Academy is, yeah, that's in New York. The history, I started as a local historian, but I have done stories about that encompass Sam Cooke. I've done stories in, you know, reference to efficient. I've done stories in reference to Andre Crouch in the Crouch Singers. I've done things that had to do with film, television, sports. I've interviewed Kenny the Jet Smith from the championship Houston Rockets, the two-time championship Houston
Oh
Rockets.
yeah, with Olajuwon, yeah.
He's from Queens as well, you know. And so I've been able to it's in totality, because my areas of focus in history is music history, African diasporan history, the history of the trajectory of Christianity through Africa, and popular culture. So those are the fields in which I've done it. Now, I also have outliers like sports history and stuff like that. So, man, a lot of things, like I'm a part of a documentary right now that has to do with the marriage between basketball and hip hop. Another documentary that has to do, I don't know if I should say it, but there's another documentary I'm part of, but you would love it. You would love, put it, I can't tell you the concept, but you would love it. I'm an executive producer on it. I'm sorry, I'm a producer on it. And then there's another documentary that I'm part of that is local, that has to do with the local building that they're trying to save. All right. So, man, I mean, I'm out here just doing what I love, man, because I think, like, I went so long being told what to do, like, sing this way, do this way, do that way. And it's like, yo, but I love history. I love putting young people in a position to be able to learn something. I mean, in Cross Academy, for free, these children are taught songwriting, vocal music, instrumental music, various styles of dance, drama. We've done visual art. Okay. You know, I love that, you know, because they're inner city kids that oftentimes don't have the money to be able to take the lessons to do that. But I'm able to bring this stuff into all their communities, and they can do it for free because of how we're funded, you know? So it's just, that's a passion for me, man. I mean, it is a passion, you know? So I'm up early in the morning, going to bed at night with all of these passions, but I love
Oh goodness.
it, man.
And you're still externally connected with Jimmy and Terry and the guys from La Day and
I speak to God, those people you just now named, I speak to them all the time. You know, whether it be verbally, whether it be through text, all the time, man. You know, I just literally got a Christmas card from Jimmy Jam, which I get every year. You know, yeah, I keep my relationships, my good relationships, good. You know, and Leotis Clyburn, as I said, who's still a part of what I, and that was the first deal that we got. You know, so that's what it's been, man, and I absolutely love it. So to hear when Courtney from Strictly Sophisticated hit me up in reference to coming and doing something in London, that's from my TL Cross solo era
Okay.
stuff. And those things caught on. Those things caught on. So I come out there to perform these things, you know,
Okay.
because again, I had a person come to me and say, "Your music saved a lot of people." And I said, "Wow." I didn't even ask her what she meant by that. But I was like, you know what? That touched me. There was another guy that came up to me. He showed me his wedding ring. And he said, "Yo, man, I have you to thank for this." I said, "Wow." He said, "So I bought this ticket, came here because I really wanted you to, if my lady is here, she came to, you know, because thank you for this." And I was like, "Wow, man." So my thing is music, and I get this from the church, the message of the music is what's most important. I'm not important. The message is. If Stevie Wonder didn't care about the message of the music, he would have musically lost you when he was doing Ribbon in the Sky, because he can. He has the musical IQ to do so many things musically that we just like, we can't even follow it if he wanted to. But he wanted you to relate to it. He could have riffed his way through Ribbon in the Sky, but he gave you the exact thing, the exact melody, because he knew you need to hear this. Don't step on the melody. Don't step on the word. Don't step on the phrase. This will hit home. And how many weddings have I been to where Ribbon in the Sky is a part of it? You know what I'm saying? So it's never about me. It's always about the message, and it's always about the people. So I'm still out here, man. I'm still out here doing things with the message and doing things that impact the people, man. And I love it.
Would there ever be, do you think, La Day, the four of you ever coming back on stage and doing stuff? Mean, if the Rolling Stones can do it in the 80s, I mean, goodness, there's no excuse for you guys.
They did. You know what? That's a great question. I don't have that answer right now, but I just saw Quint for the first time maybe in 10 years, maybe recently in the summertime. I hadn't seen Quint in well over a decade, you know. Brian and Darren I speak to on a weekly basis. And Brian, I never stopped working with Darren and Brian in some capacity. I never really stopped working with the two of them, you know. So as far as the La Day thing, man, I mean, you said the Rolling Stones did it, man. Anything is possible, you know? Possible.
I mean, just as we wrap up, because we could go on forever. If you were to think of your top five favorite tracks, especially when you not La Day, but just your favorite songs, what would make your top five list?
Is this R&B? Let's do R&B.
Okay, just yeah, do it over here.
Let's do R&B, because it would be way too crazy for me. If you do it just in different genres, I'd be Miles, I'd be Monk, I'd be Nas, I'd be Stevie, I'd be all over the place. My five favorite just songs in general, R&B.
I mean, if I can easily name my top five favorite songs, so it'd be interesting to
You
see
can?
what. So my no, number one all time is "Lady in My Life" by Michael Jackson. Then Luther's "A House Is Not a Home." Then Bobby Brown's "One More Chance." Christopher Williams' "All I See." And then the fifth one would be "On Bended Knees."
I have a version of All I See where Horace is singing the entire song. Horace Brown. Because he sang
Was he?
that first.
Oh, he did.
Horace Brown sang All I See first. And I have a version with him singing the entire song. All I See. They left him on the chorus, though.
Does it hit as hard as Christopher's?
It's different. It's different. Because Christopher's, he has more of that kind of soul, you know, soul man. He's a soul man, you know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? Whereas Horace is a soul man too, but he's a different type of soul. So Horace is a little more pretty. Christopher's is a little more gritty, you know? So that's the difference, you know. But I
Okay.
love him. Man, you just threw me out here. All right. So I'm gonna kick myself after I give these five. I'm gonna kick myself, but I'm gonna say Human Nature by Michael Jackson.
Okay.
I'm not doing them in order though. I
No,
can't.
you
I
don't have
can't.
to. Yeah.
I'm gonna say Human Nature. Michael Jackson. Overjoyed. Stevie Wonder. Overjoyed.
Okay.
That's Human Nature. Overjoyed. Damn, bruh. This is harder than I could ever imagine. All right. All right. Let's see. Let's see. I want to get into like the 90s. This is hard, man. I don't think I ever did this before. All right, I'm gonna get it. What did I have so far? I got two.
Yeah, Overjoy and Human Nature.
Overjoyed in Human Nature. I'm gonna go left and I'm gonna say Kiss of Life by Sade. I love that song. That's one of my
Okay.
all-time Kiss of Life by Sade. That's three. I know all the brothers is like, yo, you going soft with all these, man. Listen, listen. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Tender Love. Tender Love by
Okay.
Four.
Oh, okay. By Force
Jimmy and
MD's.
some beats, yes.
Yeah.
Say Tender Love, that's four. Can we talk?
Okay.
We talk. I'm gonna kill. Yeah, I'm gonna kick myself for saying these. Here's what's unmovable. Can we talk? I can't take Can We Talk off. I cannot take off Overjoyed. I can't take off Overjoyed. I can't take off Can We Talk. And I can't take off Kiss of Life. But I feel like Human Nature and Tender Love, I feel like those could kind of move around a bit with some other things. Bruh, I'm gonna be so mad at myself. I'm gonna be so soon as we get off, I'm gonna be so mad at myself. But yeah, you know what? You know what, bruh? I have enough songs on my walls. Actually, but you know what? I think I'm gonna stay. I think I'm gonna stay with those.
Okay. Okay. And if somebody asks you to name a top five songwriter producers, who would make that your
Songwriters or producers?
yeah. So like, people, songwriters or
Okay.
producers.
Now we talking, because the thing is my mood changes so much, and I'm over here, then I'm over here, then I'm over here, then I'm over there. Okay, this is easy for me. This is Jamin Lewis. No order. This is Jamin Lewis.
Yeah.
We're talking about Babyface.
Now, are we
All right.
talking about Babyface or LA and Babyface? Because they're two different sounds when he did the whole 80s stuff with the whole Bobby Brown, Karen White, and the Boys Whispers. That's different when he did his
LA
solo
and Baby.
stuff.
That's
And
LA
when he
and
did LA
Baby.
and Babyface, he had that silent partner. He had Daryl Simmons with him as well. So that those when they did that.
Oh man, you're making me choose between Babyface
You
and Babyface and LA Babyface?
And
Man, this
there's
is
two different
rough,
types of
man.
sounds. The music was different, you know. There was a different, yeah.
It was. Well, you're twisting my arm. I'll say,
Okay.
all right, I'll say Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, LA and Babyface, Stevie Wonder. I have
We got two more space for two more.
I'm gonna put this might be a little yeah, I'm gonna say Devontae Swing.
Okay. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves, but yeah, that's
He doesn't get the credit that he deserves. I'm gonna say Devontae Swing. In la one more, right?
yeah, one more.
Yeah, the one more is pretty obvious, but let me go back. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, LA and Babyface. Who was the third one I said?
Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder.
Then you went Devante
Teddy
on Teddy.
Riley.
Okay.
In that last one, oh, I'm gonna throw everybody a curveball. Bill Withers.
Okay.
Bill Withers. Bill Withers. Bill Withers. I got him right there. Bill Withers. Those are, I'm gonna go with them because if I don't, you know what? You know what? You know what? I'm gonna have to do this. Cut. Take three. This is the one. Jammin' Lewis.
Yeah.
LA Face. Stevie Wonder. Teddy Riley. And it's like I wanna do this. Prince. That's my five. Songwriter, producer, that's my five right there.
I mean, I mean, in a way, it seems unfair to have Stevie because he did a lot of his own stuff,
Okay,
and I
so
guess, yeah, because he didn't do a lot
you
of
wanna
outside.
okay, so you want you to okay, I got you. Okay, we're fine. I got you, I got you. Jimmy and Terry, LA Bayface, Teddy Riley, Prince. And I see what you're saying. He did a lot of stuff. Okay, so Prince did outside stuff. So Prince works because he did
Yeah.
outside. All right. That last one is going to be, yeah, I'm gonna go with Devontae Swing.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes sense. I mean, I think I heard when Eddie F and Teddy were talking about how Devontae just was just on another level with his production. Teddy's my all-time favorite because as a kid he just created a new sound. Everyone was like, and without from his little apartment, you know, he didn't have the machine like Jimmy and Terry or LA and Babyface. He just had, you know, he just worked with nothing. And so but Jimmy and Terry just being consistent, and as that LA and Babyface, you know, they from a you know Babyface as a songwriter with LA as a percussionist with Daryl Simmons, and they just created hit after hit after hit. So yeah, so I mean, oh, that's a and then Prince, you know, he's you know he did you ever meet him when you went to Minneapolis?
I did. We were at the studio at Flight Time in just one day. Terry said, "Yo, you want to go to Prince's house?" We was like, "Absolutely." So we go over to Prince's house. Prince is there, chilling. They had a jam session going on in his house. And Terry's there. Terry gets on the bass. One of the guys from Purple Rain was there. I can't think of his name, but he was in Purple Rain. He was playing. Chaka Khan was there. George Clinton was there. Morris Day was there. And they were all rocking out. And then Mars Day said, "Hey Prince, man, if you cool, man, you come off stage, man. If you cool, man, you come off stage." So Prince is talking to this woman. And at some point, Prince walks on to like the stage area, and he looked at every instrument to decide what he felt like playing. Crazy. Then he decided to play the piano. So he played the piano, and he was like a virtuoso, bro. Like, it was like he played every instrument like it was the only instrument he's ever played. You know, so that's the thing that's just amazing to me. You know,
Wait,
I
did
just want to throw a
you?
couple of honorable mentions.
Yeah.
I want to honorably mention Gambler.
Yeah, okay.
I want to mention
Okay.
Gambler. And I would like to honorably mention Tom Bell. That brother, all that stylistic stuff, all
Okay.
the chronic stuff, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful compositions. If you just listen to the music of the stylistics, vocals are amazing, but just listen to the music. Listen to what he was doing. Listen to the orchestration. He's no less brilliant than like Burt Bacharach or anybody like that. Any type of. So I want to also throw Tom Bell in there. I just wanted to
Wow.
honor those people.
Yeah. Did you join the stage when they had the jam session, Prince, or were you just watching?
Oh no, I was just there to meet. We were just there to meet him. And I would have loved to. I wish you're the first person to ever ask me that. Man, if I would have thought about it, if I would have even it didn't even enter my mind. I was just like, ah. You know what I'm saying? But if it would have entered my mind, I don't think anybody would have stopped me from getting up there and just doing something. I don't think anybody would stop me. I guess my thinking was like, I am among all time elite, once in many generation type talents. I don't want to miss anything. I'm just watching. I'm just watching, and I'm just
You weren't
fanning out. You know what I'm saying?
filming it or anything like that.
Like the Einstein that I am. No, I was not.
Yeah,
True Einstein, bro. There was no filming happening.
but that's the thing. I think that's the thing that I've learned when I've been around. I think when Blackstreet were around and came to the UK, and Mark Middleton was just singing, and I'm thinking, you just bring a camera and record it, but you miss the essence. The camera is evidence that it was happening, but the feeling of just seeing him just singing, or you can't record that. And sometimes you're wasting your time filming
It's
that and
lightning in a
missing the
bottle,
moment.
bro.
So, yeah.
Lightning in a bottle. You know, it happened, you know, and so you could just all you can do is just talk about it. Talk about what you saw.
Yeah. Wow. I always ask my guests favorite film. What's your favorite film?
One favorite film? Just one?
Yeah, this is just the one favorite film. Mine's Schindler's List, and some number two is Color Purple, the old one, not the new one. But
I got you.
what's your
Yeah, my favorite movie of all time is Coming to America.
Wow.
Coming to America is my favorite movie of all time. There's honorable mentions up there, you know, but Coming to America, that's my one.
Okay. And then I guess Steve is your all-time favorite singer.
Yeah, I mean, I can live with that. Like if somebody says Steve wanted your favorite singer
It
all
wouldn't be
time,
Michael.
I can live with that. Like, you know what it is? There are the people that I can live with, and then I'm gonna choose one. As far as my favorite singer of all time, I could live with Stevie Wonder. I could live with Marvin Gaye. I could live with Michael Jackson. I could live with Sam Cooke. Those are the I could live with anyone. I could live with. But if you twist my arm right now, at the very moment, I am going to go with Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Any given day, I can go with Marvin Gaye. Any given day, I can go with somebody. Any given day. So
Yeah,
right now, I'm going to say Stevie Wonder.
I'll be honest. I've never, apart from when he did the Part-Time Lover, because that was more of a that was probably my favorite Stevie song. But I've never been a massive Stevie fan, nor have I been a massive Prince fan. I, th I But you know, I th I think. I mean, outside of Teddy, my all-time favorite would always be Michael. Just, you know, he was bigger than life and everything. But yeah, it's
I'm gonna tell you why though. You're a more of an 80s and 90s music fan, right?
yeah. So I think yeah. I mean, growing up, you know, the Temptations since from the late 70s were like, you know, they were the ultimate. But I
Okay.
guess when I got into the music, it was mainly Teddy, but Michael was just Michael, so everyone knew Michael. So as I said, so more of my, you know, I got more outside of Teddy. I mean, Aaron Hall, because he was affiliated with Teddy and the voice and stuff. So yeah. So but yeah, but Prince, yeah.
Well, let me just say this. One of what I'll say about Stevie is Stevie Wonder's had a couple of primes, but his original prime was really around 1976. So you'd have to get into, let's say, Talking Book, that album, then the next album. Well, actually, where I'm coming from, Music of My Mind, Talking Book, Inner Visions, Fulfilling This First Finale, Songs in the Key of Life. That right there is between 71 and 76. So that would be the period of time. Now, when you get to the 80s, Stevie Wonder, there's another run in the 80s. But that run is much different than his run. I think between 70 and 76, what he won, like more like more than 20 Grammys or something like that. Like that's the prime. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's a really 70s run that he did. Now in the 80s, now what I'll tell you this about Stevie. When he did These Three Words, right? When he did the album was the soundtrack, Jungle Fever. When he did the song These Three Words, the lineage you hear, and I think that you hear these people talk about it from time to time, out of Stevie Wonder, the lineage of Stevie Wonder is Charlie Wilson. Charlie Wilson's lineage is Aaron. It's Aaron Hall. It's Dinky Bingham. It's what's my guy's name? He used to sing with Aaron in Harlem.
Oh,
He
you're
passed.
talking about Diesel.
Dizzo.
Yeah, Diesel.
That lineage, that's a Stevie Wonder, Charlie Wilson, then those guys. It's like that lineage that goes on. And so one of the things that I love about every artist that I truly love created their own, what I like to call, musical language. To the point where prior to, let's say, Stevie Wonder or prior to Michael Jackson, it's like you can't pinpoint a singer that used that musical language before that person. That person comes along and they create a musical language, and then the rest of us end up in that language, speaking that language. So we might end up doing like Stevie's the Latin. So you might have the English and you might have the Italian. And you might have the Spanish, but Stevie's the Latin, though. You know what I'm saying?
No, which, yeah, I mean, as I said, it's I think the Stevie of the 80s is what I preferred more, you know, my Sherry O'Mara and Lately
Yeah,
and.
no, I could tell. Like you have a more like no, I definitely get it. I definitely get that.
Yeah, and a lot of that would be because I grew up in England as a kid, then moved to Nigeria to go to high school, and the so a lot of the funk. I mean, I tell people that I didn't know people like Stacey Lattice or Tracy Spencer, or Stephanie Mills. They didn't cross over internationally. Chaka Khan did, and Tina Turner. So we were getting a lot of pop rock type of those kind of artists, and maybe Anna Whitney. But we didn't get the Phyllis Hyman, so those types. So hence, when you're not exposed to it, so it's hard to appreciate it. Yeah, it's hard to appreciate it. But well, it has been yes, it has been yeah. I really appreciate that. You know, and the thing about my journey, I don't have a script, so. And
Oh,
you know, the only reference points are a few albums that you've done and stuff, and then we go from there. So it is a lot of people were like, "Oh, Lorde was our favorite group." When I did say, "Hey, I'm going to interview," like, "Oh man, Lorde, whatever happened to them? I can't wait to hear the journey and stuff like that."
listen, shout out to everybody that ever supported Lorde. Shout out to you, because we honestly, y'all, we were just some teenage kids that was just having a lot of fun singing songs, writing songs, gallivanting across the nation, the world. Just made a lot of friends, and I would not change that point in my life for nothing. So thank you, and thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure to be here. I'm a fan. I've watched this show a number of times with a lot of different people, and I've learned a lot, man. I've learned. You dig in there. You do a great job, man. So kudos to you. Thank you.
I appreciate it, but no, I'm definitely gonna. I'll reach out to. I'll send you Kyle's details. Yeah,
Okay.
he's out in New York, so I'll send you details and stuff. But no, it definitely was great to get you. It'll be interesting to follow up to see what you're doing with your documentaries and your shows and stuff, because I think history is quite easy to be forgotten if the stories aren't told, and having it digitized like this keeps those stories going and stuff. So yeah, definitely we want following up to see what you're doing there. If people want to follow you, both on, on your social media, what's the best, where should they reach out to you?
Catch me on Instagram, 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 Instagram. This is TL Cross. This is TL Cross. I'm gonna say it a third time, because when they say in marketing, you say something three times, people can remember it now. This is TL Cross. This is TL Cross.
Okay.
Meet me over there. You might catch me doing a little bit of singing, a little bit of music, and you'll catch a lot of information, history, and stuff like that.
Okay. And then would you be going on to any tours stuff 2024?
Oh, and 20, you know what? In 2024, a lot of what I'm doing is lecturing, on history stuff. A lot of stuff I'm doing is shooting, as it pertains to the documentary stuff. But I'm always open to getting with Jimmy and Terry, being a part of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis Review. I'm always open to spot dates and people who want to have me come out, like Strictly Sophisticated just had me do recently. And I'm always open to all of that stuff, man. And shout out to Kenny Whitehead, man. Kenny's just a great guy, a really dope dude, a former a label mate of mine as well, man. So I saw him for the first time recently in a long time. I was a teenager. It was back then, the last time I saw him. Just from a legendary family. I have nothing but love for him and his lineage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and again, man, I appreciate you, brother. I'm here. Hit me up anytime. I'll come back.
No.
I'll be a friend to the show.
Definitely. But then also, yes, actually, yes. I think Jackie McGee has probably come on like five times. Woody Rock from Drew Hill. Well, from
Woody,
family of Drew. Yeah.
quick
Woody.
story about Woody. Quick story about Woody. We were in the back of the Apollo one time. Lade was, and this is something that this is interesting. There's a lot of stories I didn't get to, but we were in the back of the Apollo one time, and we're just sitting back there, chilling. Up walks Woody from Drew Hill, and I want to say he was with Nokio. It was him and another guy. And then the other guy had a camcorder. He was filming. I'm 90% sure it was Nokio, but they were new. Like, they hadn't blown up yet. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I can't remember, because now later I would have known the face. You know what I'm saying? But at the time, it was just like I wasn't sure. He walks up to me and says, "Yo, man, my name is Woody, and I'm from Drew Hill. And man, I'm a big fan." And he said, "I love this song you guys had, Without the Rain." And then he stands next to me, puts his arm around me like this, and the guy has the camera, and he starts singing the song into the camera. And I was like, this is different, and I liked him. I thought he was a really nice guy. And I was like, man, that was really, really cool. Who knew? Because a lot of groups back then didn't give each other love, didn't give each other props, because it was such a competitive kind of a, But he absolutely did that, man. He absolutely did that. And I remember when he was left the group and he was going to do his solo thing, he had me come to the studio. He said, "Yo, come by, man. Come by. Listen to some of the stuff I'm doing and stuff like that." And I stopped by. I stopped by the studio, you know. But I never had too many interactions with Drew. I never we didn't have many interactions with Drew Hill, you know, but I was very proud, you know, to see young black men out there doing their thing. Now, of course, at the time we were all competitive, you know what I'm saying, and all. I mean, I look back, man, and I'm proud of them brothers, man. I'm proud of 112. I'm proud of Soul For Real. I'm proud of any young black male that was out there singing a message of love, because we were 15, 18, 21, and we were literally talking about there's nothing more precious than to raise a family. You know what I'm saying? We were out there talking about, tell me what you want. You know, we were out there talking about, you know, only you. You know, I mean, just that's a beautiful thing to know that young black males were sitting here singing these songs of love and all that, man. And I think we were part of something special. It was a boom of young black men
Well,
out there.
that's what Darnell said when I spoke with him on both occasions. He said that one of the in the 90s there was himself, Maxwell, R. Kelly, everyone had a message of love, but when it got to the 2000s and all the conglomerates came around, they took away that message of love, and now hip hop is, of the music that was coming out. Isn't about love and isn't about family. It's about money. It's about wealth and showing off, and that has a negative effect on the black community. When in the 90s it was about love and can we talk and all these kind of relationships, and now that's not the message we're hearing on the radio, and not the message our kids are listening to when they're listening to music.
My kids right now, those five songs that I mentioned, if I put them on right now, my 6 and 7 year old will sing every lyrics to those songs. They think those songs are out now. They think those songs are current because they hear it so much. You know, I keep a real controlled environment as far as what they're hearing. They're gonna hear what they're gonna hear as they get older. But as we are dealing with the foundation of understanding what love is, what family is, who you are, as a young man, as a young lady, yo, you need to hear the meat of it, you know, not just, you know what I'm saying? And you know, and to Donnell's point, that's one of the reasons why LL Cool J has been so important to hip hop, because he's probably one of the only rappers that kept the concept of love present in hip hop the entire time. Every era, every generation, he continued to round the way, girl, I need love. I can love you better. My man Mark Dorsey, and you know what I'm saying? In those types. So shout out to him, you know, for being one of the few that that consistently kept the concept of love out front, you know, for young people who are following hip hop, because there must be balance when it comes to everything. You know, you have this and you got that. You got that and you got this. Much of one thing in any direction. Because, you know, listen, all of us are men, where many of us are fathers, some of us are husbands, you know, some of us are just, you know, just people to look up to, you know, as an example. So we're not simply just living hip hop lives. We're also living a life, and we're bringing culturally the hip hop aspect of it into it. But for the most part, yo, sometimes you're just sitting down with your son or your daughter and doing their homework with them because they're in the second grade. You know what I'm saying? And so there's, you know what I'm saying? There's so many things to like. This is why Marvin Gaye is one of my all-time favorite, and Stevie as well, and Michael as well, because Marvin Gaye is going to talk about God is love. He's going to say Right On. He's going to have another one, Right On. He's going to say What's Going On. Inner City Blues makes me want to holler. The Way They Do My Life. Crime Is Increasing. Trigger Happy Policing. Then he's going to come back and say Let's Get It On. And then he's going to do another one, After the Dance. Then he's going to come back. See, so that's life. to live life in totality. There is the party side. There is the part of romance. There is the family side. There is the business side. There's this, you live one life and everything is all inclusive. So you could never compartmentalize where everything is put here or everything is put there. So everything needs to be balanced. We had Jodeci Records where they talk about freaking you. But then they have another Jodeci song where they say, I would just love to see you walking by a wave. It would really make my day. You know what I'm saying? Like that nuance. Babyface coming, dude, not gonna cry. Should have left your ass 1,000 times. He's gonna come back. He's gonna, let's not wait till the water runs dry, you know. But you know, pour the wine, light the fire. Your wish is my command. Because there's so many things that with being alive, there's so many aspects of what goes with being alive. And these guys are like prophets of love. You will find Songs in the Key of Life. You will find Have a Talk with God. Isn't She Lovely? The Birth of My Daughter. Village Ghetto Land. What we're going through in the community. Black Man. And then you'll go back and you'll say, I wish those days will come back once more, reminiscing about your childhood. And then Sir Duke, we're going to talk about some history. Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, Knocks Me Off My Feet. There's something about your love that makes me weak and knocks me off my feet. You know what I'm saying? And so Michael does that. All the many of the great artists, they're able to kind of reach out and find all of these different aspects of life, balance it out by talking about all of this stuff. And I think those are some of the greatest people we've ever seen ever write a song, ever be an artist, you know, and I admire that about them. So to your point, Donnell's right. You know, there was a message of love. And then we went away from the message of love in R&B, you know, and I say like Paul McCartney, no matter what trend comes and no matter what trend goes, there will always be a place in the world for a simple love song. So all my writers and artists, never stop writing those simple love songs. Never stop saying, last night I saw you standing, you know, and I started pretending I knew you and you knew me too. don't ever stop writing that. Don't ever stop writing, you know, because we're all going through it. We all get butterflies, you know, when we think about the person we have a crush on and that kind of thing. Shout out to Tony Thompson. Worked with him. High five. All summer long, we've been together, and I've never felt so good because when I'm with you, that's a good time. We're still living that. People who are young and old, you know, young at heart, they're still living that. So where's the music that amplifies or that speaks to that feeling in people? We need it. You know, we need that. All you creators out there, no matter what comes and goes, don't lose focus that we still do need those things that speak to those feelings that we are experiencing every day. Do what you do, but don't forget that. Let's keep a balance going.
Definitely. Well, don't worry, this will be one of many. I can definitely see us having more chats with this, and probably the next time we go live, because it'll be great to get people to tune in and be able to ask questions along the way as well.
Let's do it, man. All right, my brother, appreciate you, man. God bless you.
Yes, thanks for marriage. It is 12:30 here, so I'll be heading out. So.
I'm just getting started. It's almost 8:00 here, so I'm good.
okay. Yeah, it's 12:30, but I really enjoyed the interview, and we'll be in touch definitely.
Bless you, man. Peace.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, guys. Really fascinating interview, and can't wait to bring him back. And we'll have another episode of Halftime Chat. Take care.
Hey guys, thanks for watching. Thanks for being a part of Halftime Chat. Please remember to subscribe, share, and comment. But most importantly, why don't you become a member of Halftime Chat? We've got amazing videos, amazing perks, and being able to support the channel. But anyway, thanks for watching. Take care.
I never participated in that kind of
thing. It's somewhere in between
us. You're either loving us or wish I didn't listen with
you. He doesn't
know the CF guy. I'll be sure. Boys are like growing up.
She's feeling like an impact. Four houses down.
I have a couple of pieces.
get this one and that one.
That works for you, but just for me, I'm...
Okay.
They don't understand what
those boys
mean in all
spirits. Yeah. Lay. There's no need for you to be running around. I love all different jobs.
Looking for something new. If it's something new and exciting you're looking for.